Welcome to Talk is Jericho, and this is the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here, so let's go for a ride. Do You Want to Start a War? We've been playing it every night on the Cinderblock Party Tour over here in the UK, which is where I'm hitting you up from. I'm in a hotel room in Nottingham. I'm going to tell you all about the Cinderblock Party Tour. I'm going to tell you all about the Fozzy shows in Nottingham and everywhere else in Ireland. And then after I talk about all that, we're going to talk to our guest today. PJ Black is back. He was Justin Gabriel in the WWE. He actually quit the WWE. He walked out of his dreams job, as he said. What would make him quit? What would make him walk away? You don't hear of that happening too often. He walked out on his own terms. Guys are usually let go or they usually retire, but he actually quit and walked away from what he calls his dream job, and he's very much happier now that he's done it. We're going to find out all about what drove PJ to that point, how it all went down, what his plans are for the future, how he got into the WWE, how he got out of the WWE, how he became Justin Gabriel, and how now PJ Black is back, baby. It's all going down on Talk is Jericho today. But right now, big shout out to all of the sponsors of Talk is Jericho. Thanks to all of you for supporting this podcast, supporting my sponsors. And the easiest way to help out the show, you know, it's Amazon links. You go to podcast1.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner, top of the page, hit the Talk is Jericho button. Every time you use one of them Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple buckolas to the show, help us cover them production costs. I got links for the USA, for the UK, for the Canada, so many places all around the world that you can shop for the stuff using my links. Get all kinds of cool stuff, man. You can get CDs, you get Black Veil Brides, you can get Shawn Michaels books, you can get Chris Jericho books, you can get Joss Gates, Memoirs of a Monster Hunter. He was amazing on Talk is Jericho last week. Loved having him on. You can pre-order the new Chris Jericho DVD, The Road is Jericho. Yeah, that's what you got to get checking out. If you like the record, Do You Want to Start a War by Fozzy? If you like the book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea by Chris Jericho, you are going to need this the third. Tercera Caída, which is third fall in Spanish. It's the tercera edition to the Jericho collection from this year. The Road is Jericho. Very cool new DVD that has a bunch more matches. If you have my Breakdown the Walls DVD, it's got a lot more matches. It's got a lot of behind-the-scenes stories. We got in a limousine. We traveled from New York City all the way to Lancaster, PA, and all I did was talk about myself, as you know, I really don't like to do very much. But it's called The Road is Jericho. It came out yesterday, March 10th. You can go buy it right now on Amazon through my links. I want you to go do that. Actually, you can buy whatever you want, but I suggest you buy The Road is Jericho. Go do it right now. But remember, there's no hidden fees or extra charges. If you happen to be doing some online shopping, go do it through my Amazon links. Go to podcast1.com. You keep our podcast free, banner on top of the page. You AG, hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you get those links in one easy click. All right, I told you I'm over here on the Cinderblock Party Tour. Recording this intro a few days earlier than usual because you got to go with kind of what the Wi-Fi situation is when you get on the road. And it's not just in Europe or in the UK. It's the same as when you're in the States too. You got to have good Wi-Fi to send these files because they're big files. So I knew that in Nottingham that I would have a hotel after the show because we have a 10 o'clock bus call tomorrow. So that means that I have an overnight in the hotel. So I got good Wi-Fi. I set up my Zoom recorder and start talking to you. Got to lay down them intros, lay down them outros, talk about my sponsors. But so far, the Cinderblock Party Tour has been insane. We've had such a great time. And we came over from Ireland on the ferry last night, which I don't know if you guys know this, but Ireland is an island. And so the first three shows were in Belfast, Cork, and Dublin, and they were all off the chain, crazy. The Dublin show was a sold-out show, but it was in this, I'd say a punk rock club. It was called Fibber McGee's. And it, probably held about 300 people, so it was a real sweat box, man. And it was so crazy because it's one of those shows where they're dragging people out of the front row across the stage because they're passing out in the front row. You always get the girls that want to go to the front and guys too, but it's just gets to be a little bit too hard to handle. Pretty little baby, let me light your candle because my mom's sure hard to handle. So they get carted away and it's just sweaty and just you leave the stage just like a wet dog. I just went and lied on the floor for like 15 minutes. And then tonight we came back to Nottingham, Rescue Rooms, which is a great place to play in town. And the last time we came here, we played with Drowning Pool, and it was a good crowd. But tonight it was sold out just with Fozzy and the Dirty Youth. But it was one of those nights where there was gremlins, a lot of gremlins in the system. And what I mean by that, if you know anything about World War II, they would say sometimes gremlins got into the airplanes and would screw things up. And it's funny because we got this really wicked intro tape. If you've heard it, it's like a culmination or a combination of War Pigs with like opera music behind it. It's really, really cool. It sets the tone. It's super dark. The stage is big. The crowd is pumped. And I walk out on stage in the dark with the intention of turning on you know, my jacket, you know, the lighted jacket. I've made it part of the Fozzy show now. And I've got a new lighted jacket that's based around LEDs. You've seen it a few times. It was on SummerSlam, and it was on a couple other WWE shows. But it had a habit of conking out. I know, like, the joke is like, oh, Jericho's jackets always break. Well, the reason why they break down sometimes is because they're all very fragile and very intricate and all prototypes. So the first couple that I had were all light bulbs and wires. And this one is all based on LED strips, okay? So I carry this thing with me everywhere on a hanger, in a coat bag, like a jacket bag, a suit bag. And I brought it over to Europe, and it's totally cool, and it works. But the thing is, you have to turn on with power bars, kind of like what you would if you bought a portable charger for your phone, for your iPhone. You know, it's kind of like a big white thing, and you stick it in there and you turn the button on and it charges your phone. Well, that's what these things are. This jacket is charged kind of like an iPhone. You got to plug it in. So you got to turn on the two buttons, and then you got to turn the switch. And for whatever reason, it takes 10 seconds to start. And tonight I didn't press the right button on the side. So when I went out into the crowd, and people can kind of see you wander out there, I turn the light, turn the switch, and the jacket doesn't come on, okay? So then I turn it again, and meanwhile, the intro is playing for Do You Want to Start a War? So I've got like 4 seconds in the dark or 8 seconds in the dark, then the lights come on. So, of course, lights come on, show must go on, and then, of course, the stupid jacket starts working because I finally was able to turn the right switch. So that wasn't a jacket broken, being broken. That was the operator being a dummy. So then we're playing the show, and of course people don't know. They just see a really cool jacket, and it lights up. And it's not the way you want the show to start, but people don't care. They're just ready to have a great time and rock out. And like Paul Stanley said, man, you know, sometimes things go wrong, and what are you going to do? The show must go on, and you're bigger than a jacket. You know, you're better than a jacket, and he's right. You know, damn it, the jacket is part of the show, but it's not the show. I am the show. The band is the show. The vibe and the energy, the crowd is the show. The people are just going nuts, and it was a really cool vibe. And then at one point I was wearing like a dress shirt, which I never wear, but it looked really cool. I took this black sequin scarf and made it into a tie, and I had really tight black pants on with like leather strips all over it and studs. So it was kind of a real cool looking vibe. And I think because the shirt was so sweaty, because it's a dress shirt, like I said, it drenched my pack. I wear inner ear monitors, which that means is that you can hear your vocals and the music like wearing earbuds if you put on your iPhone or put on your iPod or whatever it may be. So my earbuds just went dead. So I took out the pack. I gave it to one of our guitar techs, Mackie. And basically what happened was that it got drenched so bad it just died. It like shorted out. It's like dropping your iPhone into the swimming pool or something like that. And it just went dead. So I kind of sang a couple songs without inner ears, just kind of off the front of house monitors, which is the way we used to sing back in the old days before there's inner ears. And then I went to the side of the stage, and Mackie said, it's done. It's fried out. So they put a wedge in the front, which means it's a monitor that I can hear, but they got to add that while we're singing. So now the jacket didn't work, and now the wedge went out. And then Rich's guitar went out at one point before we did Died With You, which you heard earlier. So I have to just kind of ramble on to the crowd. You know, I have to just kind of talk to them and, you know, just make stuff up. Hey, Nottingham, it's great to be here. Our very first show ever in the UK was in Nottingham, which is true. And, you know, it's great to be back 9 years later. And, you know, I remember coming here one time and going to the Sherwood Park Museum. And, you know, you get in this little cart, and this old guy kind of pushes you around and kind of tells you, over here is Sherwood Forest, and over here is where the little John walked the bridge. And it's just like the worst ride ever. So I told that story, and people are laughing. And actually, I have to do a little sidetrack. I stole the show in Dublin because I told my famous line. I said, you want to hear the worst joke about Dublin? I said, you go up to the girl and say, are you from Ireland? And then she says, why? Because I've been looking at you and my penis is Dublin. They loved it. They laughed. And then this girl crowd surfed onto the stage, and she was wearing like a big captain's hat, a big red captain's hat. And same kind of thing that Paul Stanley wore in the All Night video. So I started singing All Night, which was great. And if that girl didn't get her hat back, I hope she did. If you're listening right now, I hope you got your hat back. I just grabbed it because I wanted to wear it and be Paul Stanley. Because, as you know, everything I do, I just want to be Paul Stanley. So anyways, and then tonight after you know, those things went down, and then Bad Tattoo Rich does a theremin solo, which is that weird sounding thing in the middle of the song, which is kind of like it's based around, I don't know what it's based on, sound vibrations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And first time since we started doing Bad Tattoo, like, I don't know, 50 gigs ago, it didn't work. So he just kind of, you know, the show must go on. The theremin's not working. You don't just stand like an idiot. You just grab your guitar and play a couple notes and just keep the vibe rolling. That's basically what he had to do. So even though all these things go wrong, people still going nuts. At the end of the set, because I had no inner ear pack, my inner ears were out, I took off my scarf tie, I jumped in the crowd for a crowd surf, and of course, I get dropped. I don't think people thought I was going to jump, but then didn't get dropped all the way, kind of got dropped to the floor where people then just put their hands underneath me and then picked me back up again. Then I did a nice little surf around and back on stage and still was able to jump off for the last little bit, for the last little cue. So great time so far on the Cinderblock Party Tour. And if you guys are on the fence about coming, you better not mess around. Don't screw around. This is the place to be. It's definitely our biggest tour. As I'm talking to you right now, 3 out of the 4 shows have been sellouts. The VIPs have been going crazy. They've been like through the roof, 15, 20 people every time. It's great hanging out with all of you and seeing all of you. And set list is killer. I think if you guys are Fozzy fans, you'll be very, very happy. And if you're not, I think you should still come and check it out because, like I said, we have a reputation of being one of the best live bands in the world. And that's not ego. That's what people have said, including Beyond Magazine, Rolling Stone UK, and lots of fans. Go to @FozzyRock on the Twitter if you want to read some reports. And if you live in the UK and you live in Germany and Switzerland and France, we're coming for you guys. And you are not going to want to miss out. I guarantee it. All right. I guarantee that you're also going to love the story of Justin Gabriel, now known as PJ Black. PJ Black is back. The Darewolf, baby. I love that gimmick.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, so we're here in the studio with the artist formerly known as Justin Gabriel. PJ Black is here, and you mentioned that you had that name before, PJ Black.
For 10 years before I was Justin Gabriel, PJ, which is my real name. Mm-hmm. And when I broke into wrestling, I was actually 16 years old. And I needed a name real quick. And I went through that gothic phase where I just wore black and stuff. And my dad's like, PJ Black it is. Like, my dad was a promoter too, by the way.
It's funny how guys from overseas, especially in the UK and now yourself, start so young. You know, like you said, 14, 15, 16 years old. But you mentioned that your dad was a promoter, wrestler too?
Yep, he was a wrestler and a promoter. So he put on shows. I started reffing for his company when I was like 13, 14 years old. You know, so I kind of...
So you grew up in the business?
Basically, yeah.
How was the business in South Africa? Was this like kind of in the 90s sort of thing?
In the 90s. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, it was real big. Like, mm-hmm. I remember as a kid going to arenas and watching Hogan job to our champion. It was kind of like almost a kayfabe territory, which not a lot of people know. If you speak to Drew McDonald, who recently passed.
Just passed away, yeah.
And Regal and Fit Finley, they all spend months, sometimes a year there.
Hmm.
And it was kind of big in the 70s, 80s. My dad kind of took over from those promoters. I don't know if you know the Simpson brothers.
Yeah, Steve and Scott Simpson.
Yeah,
right?
So their dad was the main promoter, and my dad took over from them.
Okay.
And then my dad passed away when I was 18, and wrestling kind of just fucking died.
Oh, died in the country.
Yeah.
Who was your champion that you said? Who's like the South?
Jan Vilkens.
Jan Vilkens?
Yeah, I don't know if you know that name at all.
I don't. I know that there was a guy in Calgary called Great Gamma. I think he used to go to...
Yeah, he used to go there all the time. Yeah. I watched him. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, he was a big
Gamma
star.
Gamma Singh. He was a huge star in India, in Durban, because Durban has mainly Indian population.
So yeah, he would always go to South Africa and was a big star there.
Huge star.
A friend of mine, though, and this is a name you might know or might not know. He went there a few times. His name was Dr. Luther. He was his name was Lenny Olson. He was from Canada. And he went to South Africa on a tour, I think, with Gamma. I believe he used the name Dr. Luther. Maybe he was the Atomic Punk, or I'm not sure what his name was when he was there. But he actually moved to South Africa for a time.
Oh, really?
And lived there working. Was there a guy called Hurricane?
Hurricane, yes. That name sounds so familiar. He might have worked under something else, though.
Yeah, under something. I can't remember what his name was when he was there.
That promoter in Durban brought in a lot of Canadians.
Right.
Yeah.
And he actually moved there and married a South African girl.
That happened a lot too. Bunch of German guys that came over, married South Africans, and just stayed.
And stayed forever, right? Yep. So you mentioned that when your father passed away, the wrestling died.
and then you came here, and the big news over the last couple months is that you actually, which is a very rare thing, you actually basically walked away, quit the WWE.
Yeah, and just quit my dream job, basically.
Just quit the dream. And now, what? Obviously, that's a huge decision for you. Probably something you were thinking about for a long time. What was the mindset that led you to quit?
Oh, man, where do I start? It's been coming for about a year or so. You know, I don't even know on the day what it was that triggered it, but it's just like I've been moving down on the card, and I've been trying really hard, you know, to get back up, and I've been working on this new character, and like everything they told me to work on, I did, and I went back to NXT, I worked on some stuff, and like nothing I did seemed to work, and it was just like, it was kind of frustrating. So, you know, I kept trying, and, you know, nothing happened over this past year, and I was just like, you know what, somehow they just killing my creativity. You know, I see myself as an artist, and I want to show people what I can do, and they're not giving me that platform. They're not putting me on TV enough to show people what I can do. And I was like, you know, on that day, I was just like, I'm done.
You mentioned that kind of something that started was you went to the Arnold Classic.
Yeah.
When you were off. Tell us about the story you're going to tell me before.
So that was about a year ago, about this time, because that's coming up. Yeah, that's where it started, because I was fully booked on everything. You know, even though if you're not on TV, I was still on everything. So I was making good money, decent money. And all of a sudden, that stage of my life, like, if you weren't booked for TVs or live events, you would just sit home. So I was sitting home for like 3 months, and I was like calling Michael Hayes, and I was like, hey, what do I need to do to get back on? He goes, you need to get back on TV. I'm like, yeah, but that's your job. He goes, send me some storylines or ideas and stuff. And I did. I kept sending every week, every day. And I was just sitting at home. I was frustrated. And the Arnold came around, and I was like, oh, it's my birthday weekend. I'm going to treat myself. Let me go check that out. You know, I was always into fitness. I was a personal trainer for years. And I went there, and so funny, I ran into Hunter, who I know is not a big fan of my work, but I was like, hey man, I'm gonna win you over one day. I'm gonna make you a fan of me. And he's like, cool man, I like that. I like people that work hard and the people that prove me wrong. And then I started working hard. I went to like NXT. No one told me to do this. I went there and I worked on this character, this Daredevil character, which I filmed my own vignettes for. I did promo classes every day. Dusty Rhodes helped me out a lot with some stuff, and all the trainers at NXT were great. They helped me out with like a new moveset, new everything, you know. And I just like that never like they never gave me a chance to do that.
What you said a couple things. First of all, we have a tradition on this show because so many guys have been through with Dusty.
Right.
You got to give me a Dusty imitation on how he helped you out.
Well, this is how I see it, baby. This character, he's like Jeff Hardy, but he's also kind of like, you know, like a rock star. And funny story, actually, when Adam Rose debuted, Dusty came up to me and he goes, that's what I wanted you to be in FCW. I was like, well, why did you never tell me that?
Ah, yeah, right, yeah. Now, you mentioned Hunter didn't like your work. What made you think that?
I don't know. Like, we had this discussion before. You know, sometimes you just get that vibe of someone. And that's fine. You never get along with everybody that you work with. But, I mean, he's sort of in charge. So I was kind of like going out of my way to impress him, I feel like. And nothing I did worked, man. And that was frustrating.
Well, sure it is, because you're a very dynamic performer.
Thank you.
I mean,
appreciate
it's
that.
Very exciting to watch. You do a lot of things that, you know, a lot of people don't do. And, of course, there's always things that you can work on. There's other things I can work on. A lot of things anybody can work on.
Oh, definitely. And I worked on those weaknesses. I know I'm not a promo guy because English is my first language, and I have an accent. And, you know, I have sometimes a weird way of expressing myself, and I don't know. But, I mean, I worked on that every single day. I know that's my biggest weakness. I worked on that every single day, and I still am. You know, just because I quit the WWE and I'm going to the indies doesn't mean I'm going to quit working on my weaknesses. That's just the type of person I am.
And what was the character that you were working on?
Oh, he was called Darewolf. So it was kind of like, the kids on Twitter started calling me Cape Town Werewolf. So,
why the Cape Town Werewolf?
I don't know. I think Twilight was big at the time.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, maybe I look like one of the wolves or something, you know, from Cape Town. I don't know. And then I started working on this Daredevil character, started watching some Evel Knievel stuff and like all kinds of stuff. So we just combined the two words, take Daredevil and Werewolf, and I turned into Darewolf. And Hunter said to me, just because you thought of it doesn't make it great, but Vince loved it. So they trademarked the name.
Oh, they did?
They did.
Oh.
So I was like, cool, this is the first step, you know. So I started filming all my own vignettes. This is another funny story. So I film all these vignettes, right? So I grew up surfing. So I've, I'd got a bunch of clips of me surfing, doing backflips on a dirt bike, like riding track on a speed bike. There was some surfing big waves, some skydiving, some base jumping, some anything crazy that you can imagine. There was one scene where I was juggling fire.
Wow.
Man, I nearly killed myself on my motorcycle twice. I rode off two motorcycles.
Trying tricks?
Trying tricks and like, you know, just trying to get the perfect shot. And I thought the vignettes came out pretty cool. And I went into Vince's office one day and I showed him all this. And it was probably like a 2-minute thing of me just doing all these crazy stunts, man, like crazy. And he gets up after everything. He looks at me and he goes, I didn't know you can juggle. I was like, cool, that's what you got from that. but you gotta love the guy, man. Crazy genius.
Classic though, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't know you could juggle.
Now to me, because you showed me a lot of the clips. I mean, I don't think I actually saw that one in particular, but a lot of the skydiving stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, I mean, I love the name for one, and you should still use it until they tell you to stop using it.
But. No, funny story. So when we didn't use it, it gets abandoned. I went to go see a lawyer yesterday, and I'm trademarking it myself.
But I love the name. I love the concept of what it is. And, you know, hey, listen, okay, you're not a great promo. Guess what? Either is Jeff Hardy. Guess what? Either was Chris Benoit. Guess what? Either was Bret Hart.
Right.
When you find your character, you know, that becomes your promo.
Yeah.
And this is a great, great character.
Yeah.
You know,
I think so. I mean, there's so much stuff I can do, but at least on the indies now, people can see that. Mm-hmm. What's cool about the indies is so big right now.
Is it?
Yeah, it's so big. And like, you know, they have like the iPay-per-views and stuff like that. So, you know, at least people can get to see that now.
Right.
And, you know, that's one of the things they said when I walked out Hunter and Vince, they weren't happy the way I did it.
Mm-hmm.
They said, maybe a few years down the line, the door's not closed, but it's mm-hmm. going to be really hard.
Well, you said they're not happy the way you did it. What did you do?
I kind of just did it over the phone.
Oh, really?
Via text.
Yeah.
So 3 straight weeks. Of Raw and SmackDown TV, I wasn't booked on anything. Not even the superstars, not even a dark match, nothing. And
were you still there?
I was still there.
Okay.
So doing all the live events, and then you go to TV, and you know TV days are long.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit there and catering, and it's so frustrating if you're not doing anything, and the days are long, man. So the third week came up, and I went to the building. I had nothing. So I left, and I went skydiving. Got like 3 jumps in. I got back.
What city was that?
That was in Austin.
So you just look up on Google skydiving.
Yeah, it's apparently huge in this country. 39,000 registered skydivers.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you just go, oh, I'm going to go skydiving.
Texas is a great place to do it too. Yeah. Got a couple of jumps in, got back, you know. No one even noticed I was gone. Mm-hmm. I had like the goggle print on my face. And Seth Rollins was like, hey, what's that? And I was like, when jumping? He goes, holy shit, how many did you get in? And long story, blah, blah, blah. Still nothing on the card. So I was like, I'm going to book my own flight home. You know, get home a day early.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be great. I've been on the road for like, I don't know, like 2-3 weeks without going home. Get home a day early. Book my flight home. On my connecting flight, I have all these referees calling me, Mark Carano calling me. He's like, where are you? You're in this next segment. And I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, never mind. Just tell him I quit. And I was like, click.
Who'd you say that to?
To whoever I spoke to.
Oh, well,
actually, no, I didn't even answer the call. I sent a text back saying that.
Tell him I quit. So what was the fallout from that?
I didn't hear back for quite a while. And Carano, a couple of days later, texted me back saying, hey, we'll deal with that later. And I was like, whatever. So I just kind of like stayed home and like expected them to call. And in my head, I was thinking, man, that was kind of like a rash decision. Like it was just like on the spot. Like I know I do a lot of crazy shit, but that was probably the craziest thing I've done, I think, in my life. I was like, I'm going to probably regret it. But I didn't regret it. And like the few days, I didn't hear anything back from them. And I was like, you know what? Even if I get travel, I'm not going to go because I'm going
to
stick to my guns and because I feel happy right now. And I did.
Mm.
You know, and Carano was cool. He was like, we're going to try to get you your 90 days. He got me my 90 days and everything, and everything turned out okay.
Wow. So it's pretty amazing, like you said, that you mentioned this earlier that you quit your dream job.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it was a rash decision, but it was a long time coming. But you mentioned that you were happy.
Yeah. That's so weird. Like, because there's so much stuff that I want to do. Like I said earlier, I consider myself an artist and I want to show people what I can do. You know, one of my goals in life was always to go to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so hard going from South Africa, going from a third world country. I could never get a visa.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully now I'll get the chance to do that, you know.
What's been the reaction since the word got out that you quit? Has there been a lot of interest in your places or
a lot of interest, surprisingly, and
not surprisingly though, man. I think like you said, it's been a long time coming. Where now you're out there,
maybe,
and people will
yeah.
be excited to have you on the show.
I can see that. Like my March and April is completely fully booked.
Really,
which is great. Yeah, I mean, some of these indies I've never even heard of, but like when I Google it, everyone's like, no, these are good ones, and. Got some great matches that I'm looking forward to, man. Like coming up against like AJ Styles and Drew, mm-hmm. obviously, and Ricochet, which is one of my favorite performers, man.
Were you keeping an eye kind of on the indie scene? Like when you were still in the WWE, were you thinking like, man, I'd like to go and work here? Because when Drew sat in that chair, Drew right. Galloway, formerly known as Drew McIntyre, about a week after
great performer. That guy, if the system can't make that guy the world champion, then there's something.
See, that's
wrong,
the thing, and he didn't walk away. He was mm-hmm. actually fired, mm-hmm. which is even more of a sting.
Yep.
The fact that you actually walked away on your own terms—that's pretty admirable. But he has been working nonstop ever since.
I know, and I've been actually watching him have fun. And I
yeah,
was like, man, that's what it's like to have fun again.
So, were you watching that kind of when you were in the system at home for 3 months, going?
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, like you get frustrated sometimes and you start hating. You're like, man, I hate this shit and mm-hmm. everything. And then I would go back and be like, you know what I liked? I liked that pay-per-view. So I'd go back and watch that, you know, and I've been getting into the Japan stuff a lot and like the New Japan stuff and all those guys. I know most of them too.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like they're having so much fun. And I got like my passion for wrestling back.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. And like watching Drew go home and watching all that stuff. And I kind of like, yeah, I looked up some indies and I've always enjoyed Ricochet. I think he's freaking great, man. You know,
is he from England or is he American? Or?
He's American.
American.
I'm not even sure where he's from, but like if you're not familiar with his stuff, like YouTube him and his
Ring of Honor guy. Or?
He's actually Lucha Underground right
okay.
now.
But okay.
He's probably the champion there right now, I think. But I mean, he does everywhere. I mean, he won the. I mean, you've done the Super Juniors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he won the Super Juniors last year.
Oh, okay.
So he's
so that's a guy that you're excited to work with.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, it's funny because I know the feeling when I was in WCW, and I never talked bad about WCW. I mean, it was a great experience for what it was. It led me to WWE, but I remember, and all of us were saying that, Eddie and I had the conversation many times. It's like, it's killing our desire to do this. Like, I would rather not do this than be here anymore. I don't want to be here anymore.
Kills that creative spirit
yes.
in you too, you know? Like, you don't want to, I mean, you've had some great matches and WrestleMania moments and stuff, but it makes you... You know, it makes you think, like, how did I think of those moments? Because mm-hmm. you need that fire in you to come up with shit like that, you know?
Absolutely. If you're not into this job 100% mentally, even more than physically, if mentally you're not there, you can get hurt, you're going to get bitter, you're going to get angry, you know, and I can see that for you, especially a young guy. I mean, how old are you?
Well, 33.
Super young.
I know.
For
that's another reason I thought, I was like, man, I can hold out for another year or two. Then my contract expires. I'm pretty sure they're not going to re-sign me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, man, but I'm not getting any younger. Like, I feel like I'm on the peak of my career right now.
Right.
So
yeah,
I should be
exactly.
doing stuff, you know?
Like, yeah. 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 And that's why, like you said, just by taking that chance, like I did the same thing leaving WCW, going to WWE. As crazy it sounds now, at the time, there was a lot more money offered from WCW, but it wasn't about that. Like I said, I will go there for free.
Exactly.
I need to get out of this environment because it kills your passion and it kills your creativity. And what used to come very easily to me was now becoming very hard to think about.
It became
ideas.
A job, right?
Yes.
Because you have to think about it. It's like, oh, what am I going to do with this guy? What
That's
am I
right.
going to do here? What am I going to do with a storyline? You know, like,
yeah.
yeah, I know. I know exactly what you mean. And for me, it was on a very small scale because I never got given the, you know, mm-hmm. an opportunity to
the last, and I'm gonna unleash a secret here. The last big thing that you did on Raw was you were the bunny in the Adam Rose. That's never been really known, is it?
I don't know.
We've let it know that you were. It's not hard to figure out when the bunny's doing like these beautiful splashes and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I played the bunny a few times, and it was kind of fun in the beginning, and mm-hmm. but then it kind of I was just like, wait, this is not going to go anywhere. And I had so many great ideas for that too.
Even pitched, for the bunny?
For the bunny, man. Pitched this evil bunny, this gothic bunny costume that the graphic guys from The Walking Dead was going to make. That make Kane's mask. And I got to show you pictures. It was awesome. And everybody loved it. And again, those ideas just went nowhere. And that's another frustrating thing because that's not the first time it's happened. I have all these great ideas and everybody loves it. And then it goes nowhere. Hmm. I think that the roster is just so big that they only care about the top storylines, everything else, you know, kind of gets pushed to the side. But that's cool. So, you know, like, and in NXT too, they're signing all the top indie guys right now. And that was another thing. Like, that, I was like, cool. So it's just opening up all these spots. Great. I'm going to go take them.
It's a good way to think about it because like you said, there is kind of a real, I'm not going to say there's a lot, but there's a group of guys that should be doing more. But because you guys have been there for a while, you're kind of just like, okay, yeah, that's great. But then we got all these guys from NXT that are coming up. So it's guys like yourself and even like a guy like Kofi Kingston, once again. I mean, he's a guy that they could be doing so much more with.
I know, right?
But he just kind of gets lost because he's not a top guy. He's not an NXT guy. He's in the middle of that. And you were kind of stuck in that as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even you're talking about the bunny. I mean, you know, we're kind of smiling about it, but it could have been something very, very cool.
Oh, dude, you wait till I show you the pictures. You know, like Adam Rose was going to be all gothic-y, like Marilyn Manson. And, you know, if this was the Attitude Era, that gimmick would be over.
Yeah.
As fuck.
It'd like, be like Doink the Clown or something.
Yeah,
you know?
But like just dark and evil and like, you know,
it's kind of scary because you've seen that in movies and stuff like Donnie Darko and stuff. Where there is
exactly.
The
that's
bunny.
What I wanted to do. The Donnie Darko bunny. Like,
was it the same bunny costume all the time?
They had a few different ones. I eventually had my own one because I didn't want to wear what the extras wore and
sweaty and smelly.
Yeah, exactly. And I modified it a little bit. And
I'm envisioning, was it Blaze of Glory where Will Ferrell's drunk wearing that mascot and he pukes in it?
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, that shows your testament. Maybe Drew was the same talking about when he was in the three-man band or whatever. Yeah, three-man band.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knew it wasn't the greatest idea, but still wanted to make it as good as he could.
Exactly.
You're
and,
still
and
trying.
And they made it great. I thought that was great. It was entertaining. You
know? And that could have been the same thing with the bunny. So, yeah.
And you know, I mean, I'm not blaming anyone. I'm not saying like maybe somewhere someone didn't like me. I'm not even, that's what I thought, but it's probably not true. They just, you know, there's so much going on and there's so much talent on the roster right now. It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's great.
I would say that's probably more than anything, probably got lost to shuffle. Plus you've been there for a long time.
Yep.
We've pushed them. We've done a lot. Let's give someone else a try. And then you kind of just get pushed
to
away.
The side, yeah.
You know, because they never let you go. That's the thing. You left on your own volition. And I can't, there's not a lot of guys that do that. So, I mean, you know, thumbs up for having the courage
to do that. And I think I got my final release on the Saturday. I did my first indie show.
Who was your first
PWS
match?
PWS. It was a 6-way suicidal scramble match, which was like, I had no idea what the rules were.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I couldn't figure out the finish. And like, I was like trying to figure out in this match, you know, because I'm a very organized person. And the guy's like, just do whatever you want. Just have fun. That guy gets going over, you know.
Who was it that went over? Who were you in there with?
I don't even remember who won the match. 6 guys. The only guy I knew was Brian XL and Amazing Red.
Okay.
And the other guys were like kind of like trainees from that school.
Gotcha.
Very talented guys because they had cool characters and they could work. And there were some really cool characters at the show too. That I became.
What company was it?
PWS.
The Pro Wrestling Syndicate?
Yeah.
So how was it going out there for your first indie after, I mean, but you worked some NXT shots, but you're going from, you know, basically working arenas to working, I'm assuming, a community center or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it was. And there were 1,500 people.
Wow.
And yeah, they went nuts. And I was like, I just walked out with the biggest smile on my face. And, you know, like intermission or whatever, I went out to sell some gimmicks and stuff. And like everyone shook my hand. They're like, man, we could tell that you were happy.
Did the fans respond to you when you came out?
Huge. It was awesome. What a great feeling. I was like, man, this is what I missed. This is what I needed. I needed that too to make me.
And one night to know that people still care, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Talk is Jericho.
So we're here in the studio with the artist formerly known as Justin Gabriel. PJ Black is here. And, you know, it's amazing because now you've got something that you can use to your advantage, too. Like, hey, I'm the guy that walked away from the WWE. I can just hear the promos now. You know, I walked away from the WWE to come to, you know, Pro Wrestling Syndicate to take this title, whatever it may be, because they know you left
on
your own volition.
Yep.
You know, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, which is weird because, like, a lot of fans still ask me on Twitter, why did you leave? Why did you leave? But most smart fans, they're like, man, well done doing that, you know?
Well, to encapsulate it to those people that are asking me, we've said it already, but if you could encapsulate it into like a couple sentences,
definitely.
Why did you leave?
What, right now?
Yeah.
Just frustrated with the whole system, you know? I consider myself an artist. I want to show everybody what I'm capable of and what I can do. And that's just, you know, entertain fans.
And that's a good
put on 5-star matches. You
know, the opportunity to put on
5-star
match.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can, a lot of people can do it, but you know, it's hard when you're on Superstars or Raw and you get given 90 seconds. Like, tell me a story in 90 seconds.
Yeah.
My thing is telling stories. And that I can't do it in 90 seconds.
I don't think anybody can. That's the hardest thing. You know, there's a little bit of a division right now that I've heard about rumblings about people in NXT and guys in WWE kind of looking at the NXT guys going, well, how can they get, you know, 25 minutes to put on these matches? Because I don't know if you've seen some of the
It's been
specials.
Going on longer than you think. And I've seen the specials because I was there trying to get booked on them even. And that was another frustrating thing. I couldn't even get booked on those. I had all these storylines written out. And they started using one. I kind of turned heel on NXT with Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was back on Raw and SmackDown, I was kind of like a tweener. One day I was a babyface, one day I was a heel. So the crowd didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I could hear, it was silent, and I could hear one guy yelling like, are you a heel or a face? You know, and I enjoyed those NXT shows, and those storylines kind of also just led nowhere. And I was like frustrated again. I was like, man,
Even down there,
and I had like this whole storyline laid out for months. Like, what happened to it, you know? And then, you know, like, maybe I should have tried harder, but like, enough of those things happen, and you're like, you want to just quit trying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just gonna, you know, quit it, and
it piles up on you.
Yeah.
So you were going to NXT on your own. They didn't send you there.
They didn't send me there on my own accord. You know,
you just showed up one day and said, "Hey, dude, I want to work here." Or?
No, I know Bill's running the show, so I get on good with him. So I was like, hey, do you mind if I do this? And he's like, no, not at all. So I jumped in the classes. You know, there's some great trainers there, which I'm good friends with. I actually learned a lot from wrestling again, like just taking Norman Smiley's class, you know, like all the stuff that you forget about, like pure wrestling. Like,
yeah.
And it made me excited again. And I can use this stuff again now, you know.
It's funny when you get, and it happens to a lot of people, you kind of get stuck in the rut of, this is what I do, and this is my comeback, and these are the moves that I do. When you get out there and do some extra stuff and learn some extra stuff, it's exciting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's another thing that frustrated me, because I was doing the same thing for about a year or two. You know, live event matches, it was the same spot on the card, same matches. It was just getting so redundant.
Very stale.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I need to challenge myself, my own creativity.
It's one of the things those last couple months I've been working just the live events.
Mm.
I had a couple months.
I know,
off.
I was on those with you actually. The last
That's
few.
Right. Yep. That's right. Yeah, yep. before you left, and like, what a cool experience! Like, everyone's like, "You're not doing TV," and it's like, "No, I don't want that hassle. I just want to come and just have fun and just do some stuff and try some stuff." And it's the best. You know?
It is the best. I don't think most fans realize that, because if they don't see you on TV, they're like, "Why are you not on TV?"
That's right.
You know, and like, they don't realize the most fun part of the job is actually the live events.
Yeah,
the matches.
No pressure, no time limit. Just go out there and just listen and react, kind of the way we were all trained and taught.
Exactly. And you know, that's what's cool about the indies right now, you know, like I just, you know, feed off them. I know it's a whole different style, and people go, oh, people don't know any psychology on the indies, but like, those people want to see cool spots. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did with a six-way too. I kind of put it together mostly myself. Like, the guys were great. Maybe they were just listening to me because they kind of like,
they're
like,
oh, well, yeah, you come from the big leagues, man.
Yeah, so I kind of put it together a little bit differently. It was more like a storytelling, like a WWE match, right? But there was like some crazy spots too, which they would never let us do on TV. Then I got great responses, and you know, the fans all stood up, and it was great.
But that's the thing, though. You can take the great stuff that you learned in the WWE as far as psychology and putting together matches.
Oh, totally.
And now take that and help some of those other guys that don't know that. Because there's nothing wrong with doing crazy spots.
No, just it's put just it in the right place.
Where do you put them?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And a lot of guys on the indies don't know that.
Yeah.
You know, don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And you're talking about kind of coming in and learning how to put together a match. I mean, I have to say, probably one of the biggest things that you did was the whole NXT invasion.
Yep, yep.
Which was an amazing storyline.
That was so much fun, dude. It's probably the most fun I've had.
And because I've had Wade on the show, I've had Ryback on the show, Daniel Bryan, we've all kind of discussed it. Tell us from your perspective kind of how that all came together. Because it started with NXT,
which
was a rookie and a pro.
Yeah. Which until the day, no one really knew what the concept of the show was going to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you were on that too, because you were Wade, I mean, a lot of people don't believe me when I say that stuff wasn't scripted. None of that stuff. Remember, like, we just walked in onto you guys and, hey, promo, live.
Yeah,
go.
That's true.
And we're like, just got get put on the spot. And I think that was great, but it kind of like ruined it too in a way. But,
Didn't you have to do a promo about a flower or something like that?
Oh, yeah, worst thing ever. And I was like,
what was your promo? Was it a flower?
Yeah, I don't even remember, but it was so bad. And that stuff too, like if they've given out a little heads up, that whole thing would have played out differently. I mean, Wade, he probably mentioned that he was very lucky to come up with that one line.
The winds have changed.
Exactly, and that just made him right there, you know.
We talked specifically about that. That was in London, about how that, that made him the winner right there.
Right there.
Yeah, we all knew
and,
it too.
And in front of his home crowd. And,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, that must have been a...
So you guys were kind of out there, and it was almost a rib in a lot of ways, like rib the young guys. But the funny thing is, though, rib the rookies, and you guys had opened, like you had been working for years, probably 10 years at that point.
Yep.
So had Wade. I mean, Daniel Bryan, I remember the big controversy they put him with Miz, and I think Daniel had been twice as much experience as Miz. But they treated you guys like kind of like as rookies, so to speak. And then it comes to the end of the season. Wade wins.
Yep.
And suddenly, I believe, I'm not going to say he won on a Monday and a Tuesday it happened, but I think the next Monday.
Yeah,
we're
that
in
was
Miami,
right. And I remember like getting eliminated too. Sorry to go back
no,
on
go
that,
ahead.
But getting eliminated. And I was like, yeah, I know my promos have sucked and that's my weakness or whatever. So I know I'm going to get eliminated today. So I'm going to just cut the promo of my life. And as soon as I got the mic, Stryker kept trying to grab it out of my hand and try to push me. So he, obviously in his ear, someone said, don't let the kid talk or something like that, you know, but they, you could never see that on camera. And I was trying to push him away. Like, and I was like, just trying to run through what I, you know, I had something in that I wanted to say and I had to get it off my chest.
Did you say it?
I did.
I remember that.
I got some of it out, you know, and, but I mean, if they let me go for 10 minutes, I would have. You know?
I remember that. I remember I might have even, like, we were talking about it afterwards because when you were eliminated, it was.
Yeah, and everyone was like, where did that come from? I'm like, it's there. You just.
Yeah, it, I remember it was something we hadn't seen from you at that point.
Yeah.
Did you have a different name? Were you Justin Angel at that point or something?
I was Justin Angel when I, that was a name I came up with in FCW.
Yeah.
And then, that's another thing. When they played the ad that NXT was going to start next week, they played Rookie Pro, you know, the ad. And it came up Justin Gabriel. And I was like, what? And everyone texted me too. I didn't even know this. And I was like, I'm Justin Angel. Like,
Not anymore.
Yeah, apparently Vince said, no, it's too gimmicky. It's a reality show.
Well, Justin Gabriel's pretty good, though.
Yeah,
Gabriel's an angel, right?
Archangel.
So, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That sounds good. So you show up in Miami. And so once you're eliminated, what do you think is going to happen? Are you going back down to FCW? Or are you?
Dude, I'm to be honest, I don't even remember what I was thinking at the time. I didn't think I was going to go back. We kind of like, when that thing happened too, the Nexus thing, that was kind of like a shoot almost because we all stuck together and we kind of like
stood
up for ourselves and we still got treated like rookies. We had to change in broom cupboards and stuff like that. People don't realize that. And, you know, like I think we had to go back to FCW at the time, but we're all just all seven of us like we did on TV. We kind of just like walked into the office. Steve Kern was there and Doc was there and we're like, hey, we're not coming back next week for training.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because you know what it's like in the big leagues or
yeah, and we were trying to just push our luck and trying to live the gimmick too because Vince made us wear those Nexus bands like everywhere in the airports and everything, so like we might as well live the gimmick, you know. Let's see what we can get away with.
So tell us about the invasion though. How did that come about? When did you find out that you were going to be doing it?
That was in Miami, right?
Yeah
On the day we Vince pulled us into the office and he's like, this is what's going to happen, this is what I want. And we're like, are you sure? He goes, yeah, just, you know, just say sorry later. Just absolutely destroy guys. And like, you know, like obviously the Daniel Bryan thing, everyone knows, like it took a little bit too far. But was that too far? Because they gave us, they told us to do anything
there
we wanted.
There was no parameters set.
Nothing.
So, right.
It was rip the ring apart. And that was my favorite part. That was like the coolest thing ever.
No one had ever seen that before.
Yeah, it was so much fun ripping that ring apart, and man.
That's something that Wade brought up. Like, we see it every day, but for the fans, they've never seen what a ring looks like, you know, torn apart, what's underneath the canvas.
And then I got to 450 Splash John Cena, and that became like the, you know.
That was the big, the peak, either the beatdown, exclamation point would be your thing. Yeah,
so that was cool. You know, I got to show one thing that I can do, but then I just became a one-trick pony, which is not true.
that was your role.
Yeah,
you'd go to the top and do that, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So,
and we had that match at SummerSlam, the main event.
Yes. That was an amazing story because that was, no one had ever seen that. Like, I remember I told Wade this as well. I knew what was going to happen. Wade walked down, and then when Tarver showed up with the half mask on, I said, okay, I know what's going to happen. I get it.
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments where people were silent. They couldn't believe it. I still say one of the best surprises and one of the best angles in the modern WWE era, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah.
One of those Vince classics, you know?
Yep. And that's what everyone says, you know? All the fans, like, keep saying that. That was the best best heel faction ever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was fun, definitely fun doing.
And in the main event of SummerSlam was great.
Yeah, we should have just played that out differently, I think. I mean, we were too scared to stand up for ourselves. I mean, I know you and Adam did. We mm-hmm. should have.
Yeah, we.
You know, that finish should have been.
Yeah, we
different.
Didn't think the finish that John and Wade did should have gone down yeah. the way that it did.
Yeah.
And afterwards, Cena agreed with us, and I was like, "You should have agreed with us beforehand,
yeah,
man."
And we were too young, and we were rookies at that time. We should have said something too, but we mm-hmm. all knew that. But we were like, "Okay, this is how stuff works."
Yeah, and quite honestly, had you said something, it might have been bad.
True, because we were rookies at the time.
Yeah, and not necessarily rookies, but you're the new kids on the block getting the push of your lives.
Yep.
And that's kind of how WWE does things. I mean, don't forget, it's the same company that when they brought Brock Lesnar back, the first match he had with Cena, he lost.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes they do stuff like that. So, you know, I think if anybody could have stood up for it more, we probably could have, Adam and I. But then after a while,
I know you guys tried.
Yeah, we tried, and it's not worth, you know, it's not my thing. Yeah. So whatever, yeah. you know what I mean? But, amazing moment beat. But I remember I told you guys though, remember that we had those house shows we were working
on. Oh, yeah. I mean, you guys helped us out a lot too, you know.
Yeah.
You guys also made that storyline happen because you let us do what we were good at the time and what we were supposed to do, and also gave us a lot of advice, and
mm-hmm.
thanks for that. I don't know if I ever said thanks, but
I appreciate it. I remember saying to you guys, it was like, listen, for some of you guys this is going to be the biggest thing of your career. And some of you guys will be gone in a couple months.
I remember exactly when and where you said that too.
Where was that?
It was at a house show. I think it was in Tennessee.
Mm.
And I remember that.
Yeah.
It's weird I remember that because I don't have a good memory at all.
Remember more than you think.
Yeah.
We were talking about the whole Darewolf gimmick and about how much of it was. And it's funny because when I was in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Lance Storm and I were the Thrill Seekers.
Right.
And our video was us like jumping on Velcro walls and like skating on the ice and like feeding bears. It was like the worst Thrill Seekers ever. Like you and Jeff Hardy are like the actual Thrill Seekers. Now, and you started doing this skydiving thing a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, I started doing it for this character. I was like, man, I need to get a shot of me doing this. So I did it like once or twice.
Oh, so you learned skydiving for the Darewolf.
Yeah. Well, so what happened was, okay, I'll make this short. So I grew up surfing. So mm-hmm. that was my first passion in life. But when I moved to Florida, when I got signed, no waves around. And I was looking for something to do, you know, to fill that adrenaline void, so to speak. So, you know, like one of my friends had a voucher or Groupon or whatever for skydiving. And I went with her one day because I didn't give a shit about anything anymore. So scared going up. But as soon as I jumped out of the plane, I was like, wow, this is what I want to do.
Well, how do they prepare you? Like, what do you do?
Man, I don't know, man. It was kind of weird too, because these hippies I think they're hippies, and they, you know, like they're like, yeah, I was gonna strap you in here, and then, you know, this thing on my wrist, it'll tell us how high we are. But if you look into my eyes, you can tell how high I am. And then I was like, what? Wait, what? Yeah, so I did a couple of jumps because I wanted to get a shot, just jumping by myself, and just got hooked, man.
Do you have to go with a guy like? On a guy's back at first?
You don't have to. You can just go through the ground school. It's like 6 hours, and they teach you like some pretty decent skills, and which was weird too, because I sat through that whole class thinking, oh, I'm going to be a master at this. And then you jump out the first time, one guy on your left arm and one guy on your right arm, and they kind of like let you go for a few seconds in midair so you can feel, you know, what it feels like to free fall. And then once I pulled the parachute too, I was like trying to think back of what I learned in class, and I was like, man, I have no idea how to fly this thing. But you'll be surprised when your life's on the line, you figure it out quickly, man.
And that's the your life is on the line.
Yeah.
Basically. Like I would be just like one of those things where I pull the parachute and somebody forgot to pack it or something like that. It's just like, ah.
Now, those things are made to fly. I'm the worst packer in the world. I roll that thing up in a ball and it flies. Like when I got to like 400, 450 jumps, I was like, let me see what this thing can do. I've never had a ride on my reserve parachute. So I would literally roll that thing up in a ball and just shove it in, because I was frustrated too. So I was like, you know, if I die, whatever, who cares? Yeah, but that thing would just fly. It would open really hard, like almost broke my back a few times. Uh-huh. But that thing is made to fly.
You've had 450 jumps?
But like 478 right now.
So when you jump out, like, does the wind take you, like, where you could start flipping, or can you glide on it like a wave? Or
the better you get, the more control you have, you know, like you start doing like belly, like, turns left and right, and then front flips, and then back flips, and then you start doing free flying, which is like head up and head down. Like when you're on your belly, you fall at about 125 miles an hour. When you have your feet down, you get to like 150. When you get your head down, that's the coolest thing in the world.
Oh,
you get,
gosh,
200 miles an hour, and that's what I'm busy. I got everything else mastered except that. but learning real quick.
It's and I've seen awesome. You jump out in like in a t-shirt and jeans or something. So you don't even wear like a suit anymore.
Nah, I mean you can. Like, I have a cool suit now.
You talking about the flying squirrel suit?
Oh, the wingsuit. Those are awesome.
It looks like a little flying squirrel type thing. What's the deal with that?
So you have wings. It's kind of like a plane. So instead of like when you normally jump, you fall at 125 miles an hour straight down.
Mm-hmm.
Now with a wingsuit, you only fall 30 miles an hour down, but you have that forward drive, which is anything from 100 to 200, depending on the suit you're flying. So you have to fly patterns like with the plane. Otherwise, you fly too far away from where you have to land. And like a few times when I've had malfunctions and I had to pull the reserve, I landed like in the middle of Zephyr Hills and I had to like hitch a ride back.
No way.
Yeah.
With your parachute
with
in hand.
Parachute and a squirrel suit. I think there's one time I actually landed on it was like an old age home or something. Like all these people were sitting on the porch and I just kind of came crashing down and I did this like tumble roll because I didn't like unzip the wingsuit and everything. And these people kind of just stared at me. Like,
it's like a mother having a family barbecue or something. Yeah. That's you think they're getting invaded by Russians or something.
That was insane, dude. Like knowing now I know how my emergency gear works. And then it happened again a few months later. Like I was jumping with some of the best guys in the world too. And I was trying to impress them with a wingsuit and we were just flying. Like I know why birds flock now, by the way, because like when you fly together as a group, it's the most incredible feeling in the world. It's like
just
phenomenal.
Like the teamwork of it or?
Yeah, I can't explain it. It's just like, when you see someone else flying, we're going at 200 miles an hour forward and we're going through the clouds.
Just the grace of it.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And like you've seen the Instagram video.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We're going at 200 miles an hour forward, but it looks so slow and peaceful, right?
Right. That's make awesome. It look so easy.
Yeah, so and I did this jump with these guys and then I reached back to pull and my handle wasn't there and it was just gone. So I was like, oh man. And the more I try to dig into my back pocket to reach the handle, the more I drop my right shoulder of the wingsuit. So now I'm spinning out of control.
Ooh.
Right? So I'm like, this is it. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And I see all the tandem guys falling next to me too. So I'm trying to just stay clear of them so I don't crash into anyone else in the sky. And I saw a little church in front of me and I was like, this is how I'm going to go out. I'm just going to fly straight into the roof of that church, at least make it memorable, you know, at least make the news or something. And then I don't know what it was. I was just flying, flying, flying. And then My head was like ready to go, but my body, all of a sudden, I just pulled my reserve and it worked. So I don't know if you know what a parachute looks like. The main is at the bottom and the reserve is at the top. Mm-hmm. So because the main didn't come out, I didn't think the reserve was going to come out, but it popped out. And I just in time to freaking land, did a little roll and then I was like,
whoa. So so when the reserve comes out, how high up were you? Like were you starting to get?
I was low. Like you normally like skydiving is actually you think it's not that safe, but it's pretty safe because you're trying to pull at like 3,500 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So when something goes wrong, you have at least 30, 40 seconds to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I'm not sure. I left it for 30, 40 seconds too long in the wingsuit before I, because I decided that this was it because I had no way out, and then somehow my instincts, my. I remember. I must have remembered.
But isn't that what the reserve is for? Is like your kind of backup plan.
Yeah, but you have the reserves on your heart, and then the cutaways on the other side. And you have to cut that one away first, the one that's not working.
Oh.
And then you pull a reserve. And I didn't even have the other one open yet. So I was
somehow
like,
it just worked.
Somehow it worked, but now I know for future reference. You know, like it.
Wow, man. So how fast did you hit the ground? Do you think? Fast.
I was fast, and all I could think of is holding onto my handles because, like, those cords are like $50 each. You know, like the equipment's really expensive, by the way.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to hold on to that, and like, I was just like, everything happened
That's
so
crazy,
fast,
man. Is that the closest you came to dying in this 450 jumps that you've had?
I think so, yeah. But from that experience, I learned a lot. You know, I don't think.
Well, yeah, by barely surviving now, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
Exactly. It's amazing what your body, like, when you're in that situation, like, what you think of. And people say your life flashed before your eyes. That's not true.
Uh-huh.
It's not true.
Isn't that true? You just were like, all right, here
I was
go.
Like, yeah. I was like, all right.
How long does it take to like, if you jump out of a plane, how long does it take to get from the plane to the ground?
If you do a belly jump, about 60 seconds.
That's it.
If you do a free fly jump, about 40 seconds. Wingsuit. Depending on the suit, I can get to like 2-3 minutes of flight time.
Oh, because you can glide a bit.
Yeah,
because
you're actually flying a
pattern. That seems so crazy, like 40 seconds, 60 seconds. That's so fast.
You'd think that, but count 40 seconds right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of time to make decisions and do stuff. you know.
And when you're going towards the ground, like if you were going towards like a tree or something, can you pull the parachute so you can kind of go to the left or go to the right?
Oh yeah, it's like driving a car. It's like, okay, this is left, this is right. Those are brakes. And this is another fun dynamic of the sport too, which a lot of people don't realize. They call it canopy piloting. It's a whole different sport. These guys jump with, the smaller the parachute is, the faster you come in.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys jump with these tiny, tiny parachutes, and they only jump from like five grand, and they just open it up immediately. And what they try, and they try and come in as fast as possible, and they get to like 70, 80 miles an hour, and they skid across the water like this, and then they try to hit the bullseye. And that's the most dangerous sport in the world.
What's it actually called?
It's like canopy piloting. It's like
that's the name of the sport, canopy piloting.
Yeah, it's like it's a form of skydiving, but it's right now.
You really are.
That's what I want to do. What I want to get to.
To be able to do that.
Yeah.
Is this something you can do like on a pro circuit or something?
There's a pro circuit. Like the U.S. team is really freaking good. I think the U.S. guy actually won the world champs.
How do you win?
So they have three rounds. Like there's speed, accuracy, and distance.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to obviously come first in one of those and do pretty well in the other two.
Okay.
Yeah.
So get down to the ground fastest. And
they have these buoys on the water.
Okay.
There's always a line of water. So you have to hit certain buoys, drag your foot in the water, and then there's a bullseye where you have to land. And then obviously the speed one, they measure your speed of your foot dragging across the water. And
you know what you need to do? You need to make that
swooping. That's what the sport is
swooping?
Called.
Swooping?
Okay. Yeah.
You need to make that evil gothic bunny and make that your parachuting suit.
Right? that'd be sick.
So here you are, man. You walked away from the dream job, but I think you're on to other dreams. You probably feel better than you have in years and years and years. What's your goal for the next couple of years on the Indies? What do you want to accomplish?
You know, I haven't even thought about years, but the next few months, I just want to like show people what I can do, you know, like mm-hmm. what I'm capable of. I have some great bookings, like I said, against guys that I've admired. So I think to keep this kind of buzz going, I have to have good matches so people can go, oh, wow, we want to go see this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think a lot of guys, when they quit WWE or get released, they kind of get lazy, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you hear the stories about the old timers all the time,
right?
You know? And I think I just want to, you know, go the other route. I'm setting up a website right now, which is pjblack.com. It should be up and running next week. It's something I did at college, so I'm doing it myself, and that's another passion of mine. It's like I did web design and graphic design,
okay,
at college, so that's another passion of mine. Designing a whole merch line, which should appeal to not only wrestling fans, which I'm kind of excited about.
Everything.
Be launching soon, yeah.
I'm sure your fans are excited to see what you got, because I know you have a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess. Like, you know, WWE is a worldwide show.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
A lot of
you know,
followers from all around.
When you talk about, you said some guys get lazy, and once again, I keep comparing you with Drew, because he was the same. It was the exact opposite. It's like, I have something to prove now.
Yeah.
I'm going to prove them wrong.
Right.
Have you talked to him about this? Did you talk to him beforehand?
I before I made the decision? No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. But I would see him at the gym and be like, hey, man, so how's it going? And like, he'd send me a link, and I would watch the matches and these like 15 minutes insane promos he was cutting. And I was like, man, is that what the Indies are like? And he was like so much fun. And I would see Trent around all the time.
Oh, yeah, Trent
Beretta. And he's having a blast. And like Mike Hutter, EC3.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I would see those guys at the gym all the time.
What was he in WWE? He was, what was
Derek,
his name?
Derek Bateman.
Bateman, that's right.
Derek. Also another talented guy that never got the opportunity. Like, so
very
creative.
Cool, good promo.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this too, as we're getting ready to wrap up. When you go onto the Indies, I know like when Daniel Bryan was on last year, he mentioned when he got fired after the NXT invasion that he went onto the Indies and made more money than he was making in the WWE at the time. Is this something as well too? Can you go to the Indies and make more than you do when you're in the WWE not working?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, the hustle is a little bit more because you have to hustle selling merch mm-hmm. and getting bookings and stuff like that. And a lot of the stuff is a lot of the promoters pay cash. And especially now, because I've just recently walked away, like I've been asking like crazy fees, and like they all say yes. So I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, might as
well. You
know,
no hustling. And I think there's potential to make a lot of money on the Indies. It all depends on you. Like you.
Right.
Now that I'm my own boss too, plus I've never done the Indies in the U.S., so this is a very the first for me. So that's what I'm excited about, like trying to figure out the system and how it works. And you know, it's something new. It's like a new, it's like a total new freaking
You came
adventure.
Right from South Africa to FCW, basically?
So I broke into the business. I'll give you a short version of the story. When I was like 16, I was on the road full time for 2 years. Did about 150 matches, and then my dad got shot. So I was I didn't even watch wrestling anymore. I just
quit. You were done, yeah.
Done. I didn't even, that whole era where Vince bought WCW, I didn't even know that happened because I refused to watch it. I didn't want anything to do with wrestling. And I packed my backpack and I kind of went soul searching through Europe and, you know, just did my own thing, which my family really got mad at me, by the way, because I just left and I didn't speak to anyone. But I needed this
in
my life.
Journey, yeah.
Yeah, I needed that. And I ended up staying in London for 5 years, ended up getting my master's degree in sports science.
Oh, wow.
But that's a long other story. But one day I just ended up walking into an indie wrestling show and I have no idea why. I cannot remember how I did that. I was just walking on the street and I heard bumping and I went in and
I heard bumping.
Yeah. And I saw AJ Styles versus Johnny Storm. And I was like, how did I walk away from this?
Mm-hmm.
And I found a wrestling school again. This is 4 years of no wrestling. It was like starting from scratch. Like I couldn't bump. I couldn't hit the ropes. I was like, man, it's not like riding a bike at all. And then, yeah, so I started working the indies in the UK, got kicked out of the country after staying there for 5 years and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Went back to South Africa. Worked the indies there for 3 years, and then I just started sending my tapes, and I got picked up.
You got picked up from sending your tapes?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't even have you do a tryout?
Well, what happened was, this is another long story. So mm-hmm. they no one responded to me. I sent tapes to everybody's address I could find, like Stephanie, Hunter, like whoever was a Bucci, whoever was in talent relations, like everybody I could find, Steve Kern. And one day I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just like give them a call. I think I rocked up this was the most ballsy thing I've ever done. I just booked a flight, came over for 2 days, rocked up at FCW.
To Orlando?
Yeah. Well, FCW was at Tampa at the time. And then Steve Kern was like, I know you from somewhere. You're that guy from the jungle. Because I guess one of my promo pics, I was standing in front of a tree. and then they were like, no, we can't let you in. Because I guess a week before that, they had some troubles with people just rocking up.
Oh, okay.
And then, but Steve Kern kind of took a liking to me and he helped me out a lot. And he gave me a tryout that day, and then it was against Ted DiBiase. Okay. Had a couple of promos, and I spent a couple of days there. And then, yeah, I went back home, and then,
You got the call?
Yep.
That's great, man. What, last question, what's your favorite match or some of your favorite matches that you've had?
That I was involved in?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I have so many. Edge, you know Edge, retired world champion?
Mm-hmm.
The last match he actually lost on TV was against me.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it when you were part of the core?
Yeah. Okay. So we cheated to win, obviously, but you know, the win's a win.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. That was an awesome match because we got time. And I actually watched it back the other day and I was like, wait a minute. Like they cut out a bunch of stuff too because I think we went like 7 or 8 minutes over.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like they cut out but you know, that was a fun match. Everything we did as Nexus was fun. I also had a small run with Tyson Kidd as a tag team,
mm-hmm.
and it was insane because we had all these awesome matches on the live events, and we get to TV, and Michael Hayes is like, you know what we need? We need a team that can do all this stuff, and Fit was like, the guys are right there. They've been doing it for weeks. We're, you know, like, read the reports, watch the tapes or whatever. That was fun.
That's cool, man. Well, you got a lot of cool stuff going on, and this is a new dawn for PJ Black, a new birth.
Yep.
I think you're gonna tear it up on the scene, man.
PJBlack.com. Yes. It'll launch next week. Bookings@PJBlack.com for booking inquiries.
All right. Inquire, pay him lots of money, and he will blow your socks off.
Yes, I will.
Thanks, dude.
Promise you that. Thank you.
Thanks to PJ Black. He's back, man. The Darewolf is going to be on the scene. Keep an eye out for him. I want to thank him for coming on my show. First and foremost, telling us the reasons why he quit his dream job. He's already booked up. He's going to do great. He's a super talented performer, good-looking guy, smart inside the ring. Go to pjblack.com and find out where the Darewolf is coming to wrestle in your area and go check him out all around the world. You know he's going to be there. And speaking of being around the world, Cinderblock Party World Tour almost halfway done. Dirty Youth is on the road with us. And, man, they are kicking ass every night, too. Love lead singer Danny. She's killer, Danny Monroe. She wears light-up sunglasses. I was like, could be some gimmick infringement here. But tonight, March 11th, Wednesday, the tour hits London at the Underground. This show is almost sold out. There's only a few tickets left. Don't get left out. Don't be the guy that people go, hey, did you go see Fozzy? Did you go to the Cinderblock party tour? And you went, no, I didn't go. I didn't get my ticket in time. And then they beat you senselessly around the head and shoulders for missing out on Fozzy, or they put a kick me sign on your back. Don't be that guy. Be the cool kid in class. Come to see us at the Underground in London, March 11th tonight, then 12th in Bristol, 13th Exeter, 14th Southampton, 15th in Brighton. We got Rod Smallwood, Iron Maiden managers coming, Nigel Glockler, the drummer from Saxon. It's going to be a rock and roll party in Brighton. Then we head across the pond, 17th Paris, France, 18th Pratteln, Switzerland. We can do some yodeling there. Then we hit Germany. All three of these shows are doing good too. March 19 in Munich, 20 in Mannheim, 21 we close the tour in Bochum, Germany. There's still tickets left to a lot of these shows, and don't forget the VIP packages. Come hang out with Fozzy, come meet us, take some pictures, we'll sign whatever you got, we'll make you a sandwich. How's that sound? Go to FozzyRock.com for all information, all gig information, all ticket information. I want to say thanks to everybody that came to the Cinderblock Party Tour, and thanks to all of you for listening. Don't forget about Amazon. You can use those Amazon links for your online shopping to help the show. Podcast1.com. Keep our podcast free, banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You know, every time you do that, you're going to help out this show, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys. You know, I love you. I love to love you, baby. So stick around. We had another great show this week. Another one's coming up on Friday. Until then, in the meantime and in between time, stay cool, stay hip, stay hot, stay hungry. And on Friday, I got adult movie legend Stormy Daniels will be here. I know a lot of you like the Asa Akira show. Stormy is a completely different animal. She's actually become way more famous directing and writing adult movies than she ever was in starring in them, even though she stars in them as well. She's a legendary performer. She's in the AVN Hall of Fame, and she's an amazing, amazing guest. She's coming up on Friday. So stick around. You'll talk to Stormy. You're going to be rocking. I'll tell you most tales about the Cinderblock Party Tour. And you know how it is, man. You know how we do. We just come around here and we have a good time all the time. Yeah, boy. See you on Friday.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.